separate and apart from what the liberals wanted. Separate and different from the NAACP or the African middle class that has assumed all the characteristics and peculiarities of the dominant, you know, power, source of power in this country. When this movement had actually defeated imperialism ideologically and defeated U.S. imperialism ideologically and politically, had turned its back on the U.S.
Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live.
Welcome to Africa Live here on ahuraradio.com. I'm your host, Nyambinga Zimbabwe, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. We plan to talk in a little while with participants of the Freedom Summer Project. We had a set of them here last week and another set here the week before, and we got some folk here this week who weren't here either of those 2 weeks, and some who you may remember from before. As well. So we're going to talk with them, you know, around how things are going with the Freedom Summer Project, get an update. We also plan to talk later on with Lawrence Ham, the chairman of the People's Organization for Progress, about a campaign that POP, the People's Organization for Progress, is engaged in, a daily people's campaign for jobs, peace, equality, and justice. So we plan to talk with Chairman Lawrence Ham around that later on today. What we want to do now is raise a salute to Marcus Garvey, one of the greatest anti-imperialist African leaders ever. And today is the anniversary of the founding of the Universal Negro Improvement Association. And what we want to do to commemorate that is to play a speech of Marcus Garvey, actually performed. It isn't Marcus Garvey himself, but is a speech performed of his. I believe this is Ron Bob Simple. This is a speech that we played on here before as Marcus Garvey, because then we thought it was, but then we realized that it was not him, actually, though it was a speech of his. And so we're going to play this this Marcus Garvey speech for you in commemoration of Marcus Garvey and the founding of the Universal Negro Improvement Association.
Improve and protect the millions and suffer. I decided to do the latter. There is no future for people who deny their past. My foreparents, my grandparents, my mother, my father did not suffer and die to give me an education to slight, oppress, or discourage my people. Because whatsoever education I acquired out of those sacrifices of over 300 years, I shall use for the salvation of the 400 million black people of the people of the world. And the day when I protect my people, may God Almighty say there shall be no more light for you. Unequivocally rejected the racist assumption of much white American Christianity, namely that God had created the black man inferior and that he had intended Negroes to be absorbent class, hewers of wood and drawers of water. Well, I dedicated my view of man on the doctrine of Imago Dei. All men regardless of color are created in the image of God. Now from this premise followed the equality of all men and the brotherhood of all men. The biblical injunction of Acts 17:26 reminds us that he created of one blood all nations of men that dwell on the face of the earth. I was most interested in brotherhood within his own race, because if Negroes are created in God's image and Negroes are black, then God must in some sense be black. If the white man has the idea of a white God, let him worship his God as he desires. He has found a new ideal. Because whilst our God has no color, and yet it is human to see everything through one's own spectacles, and since the white people have seen their God through their white spectacles, we have only now started to see our God through our own spectacles. But we believe in the God of Ethiopia, the everlasting God, God of Father, God of Son, God of Holy Ghost, the one God of all ages. That is the God in whom we believe, but we shall worship him through the spectacles of Ethiopia. For 240 years, we have struggled under the burden and rigors of slavery. We were maimed, we were brutalized, we were ravaged in every race. We are men. We have hopes, we have passions, we have feelings, we have desires just like any other race. The cry of race all over the world, of Canada for the Canadians, of America for the Americans, of England for the English, of France for the French, of Germany for the Germans. Do you think it unreasonable that we, the black whole world, should raise the cry of Africa for the Africans? The Negro is a man. We represent the new Negro. His back is not yet against the wall. We do not want his back against the wall, because that would be a peculiar and desperate position. We do not want him there. It is because of this that we are asking for fair compromise. Well, the Belgians have control of the Belgian Congo, which they cannot use. They have not the resources or intelligence. The French have more territory than they can develop. There are certain parts of Africa in which they cannot live at all. So it is for you to come together and give us a United States of Africa.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. We are not going to be a race without a country. God never intended it, and we are not going to abuse God's confidence in us as men. We are men, human beings, capable of the same acts as any other race, possessing under fair circumstances the same intelligence as any other race. Now Africa's been sleeping, not dead, only sleeping. Today Africa's walking around not only on her feet, but on her brains. You can enslave, as we've done for 300 years, the bodies of men. You can shackle the hands of men. You can shackle the feet of men. You can imprison the bodies of men, but you cannot shackle or imprison the minds of men. Rise down, black men, and take. Reach up, black men and women, and pull all nature's knowledge to you. Turn you around and make a conquest of everything north and south, east and west. And then when you have wrought well, you will have merited God's blessing, you will have become God's chosen people, and naturally you will become leaders of the world. And as you bow down to the white man today, so a lot of races bow down to you and call you a race of master because of the superiority of your mind and your achievement. Because no race has the last word on culture and civilization. They do not know what we are capable of. They do not know what we are thinking. They are thinking in terms of dreadnoughts, battleships, airplanes, submarines. You know what we are thinking about? That is our own private business. Credit for being able to use our minds. And the people becoming conscious of themselves, determined to use their minds, you do not know to what extent they can go. Liberate the minds of men, and ultimately you will liberate the bodies of men. We love the white race, not for social fellowship, but for the common brotherhood of God and telling we should live. What satisfaction can anyone get in being happy and see his brother wallowing in filth, dirt, and disease? How can you be happy living in luxury and your brother's living in disease, and then when you try to help the one out of the disease, the subculture talks about disloyalty? Black men of Carthage, black men of Ethiopia, Timbuktu, Alexandria gave the light of civilization to this world. Ethiopia shall stretch forth our hands unto God, and princes shall come out of Egypt. The classes, nations, races have been quite quiet for over four centuries. Who was merely born of youth, insult, humiliation? Whose forbearance can only be compared to the prophet Job, as likewise lifted his bowed head and raised it up to God's skies and cried out, I am a man, and it's a man's chance and a man's treatment in this world. But I shall teach the black man, I shall teach the black man to see beauty in his own kind and stop bleating his skin and otherwise looking like what he's not. In the days of slavery, race mixture, miscegenation had occurred because the African woman had no protection from the slave master. Therefore, there is no need today for black people to themselves freely continue a practice that smacks so much of slavery. Our critics say that the race problem will be solved through higher education, through better education, than black and white will come together, that they will never happen until Africa is redeemed. Because if those who like W.E.B. Du Bois believe that the race problem will be solved in America through higher education, they will walk between now and eternity and never see the problem solved. God made man lord of his creation, gave him possession and ownership of the world. And you have been so darned lazy that you have allowed the other fellow to run away with the whole world, and now he's bluffing you and telling you that the world belongs to him and that you have no part in it. I don't have to apologize to anybody for being black, because God Almighty knew exactly what he was doing when he made me black. If black people knew their glorious past, then they would be more inclined to respect themselves. Yes, you heard of Johnny Walker Red. I'm black. Well, he had his adversities, but he's still going strong. Well, I intend with your help and God's grace to continue. Because my work has only just begun. And future generations shall have in their hands the guide by which they shall know the sins of the 20th century. I know, and I know you too believe in time, but we shall wait patiently for 200 years, if need be, to face our enemies through our posterity. When my enemies are satisfied, in life I shall come back, or in death even to serve you as I served before. In life I shall be the same, in death I shall be a terror. Then count on me to be the real Marcus Garvey I would like to be. If I may come in an earthquake or a plague or a pestilence or as God would have me, then be assured that I shall never desert you and make your enemies triumph over you. Will I God not go to hell a million times for you? If I don't, my work will only just then begin. For I shall live in the physical or a spiritual to see the day of Africa's glory. When I am dead, wrap the mantle of the red, the black, and the green around me, for in the new life I shall rise up first with God's strength and blessing to lead the millions up the heights of the triumph that you well know. Look for me in a world when I was calm. Look for you of grace. I shall come back with countless millions of black men and women who have died in America, those who have died in the West Indies, and those who have died in Africa to aid you in the fight for liberty, freedom, and life. Any leadership that teaches you to depend upon another race is a leadership that will enslave you. leadership. The teachers you can depend upon another race is a leadership that will enslave. They gave leadership to our poor parents, and that leadership made them slaves. But we have decided to find a leadership of our own to make ourselves free men. Our great scholars haven't passed through the colleges, the universities have thrown away the blessed record. Babylon did it. Assyria did it. France under Napoleon did it. Germany under Prince von Bismarck did it. England under America under George Washington did it. Africa with 400 million black people can do it. If you cannot do it, if you are not prepared to do it, then you will die. You race of cowards, you race of imbeciles, you race of good for nothing. If you cannot do what other men have done, what other nations have done, what other races have done, then you have better die. Can you do it? We can do it. We shall do it. We pray to God for vision and for leadership. And He has given us a universal vision. A vision that will not limit our possibilities to America. A vision that will not limit our possibilities to the West Indies. But a vision that said it must be a free and redeemed Africa. Christ the crucified, Christ the despised. We appeal to you for help, for succor, for leadership. When you endeavor to carry your burden at the heights of Calvary, when white men scorned you, when white men scorned you, when white men spat upon you, when white men pierced your side, or the blood and water gushed out, that man in the name of Simon the Syrian who took your cross and bore it at the heights of Calvary. And now that we are bearing our burden of being so heavy, we just ask that you just help us all up the heights. Oh, yes, the cause is grand, the cause is close. Surely we shall not turn back. Oh, sail on, sail on, sail on, oh, mighty ship of state, sail on. Sail on until the flag of the red, the black, and the green is perched upon the hills of South Africa. Because the time has come for the black man to forget his hero worship of other races and to create and emulate heroes of his own. We must canonize our own saints, create our own martyrs, and elevate the positions of fame and honor black men and women who have made a distinct contribution to our racial history. Sojourner Truth is worthy of a place of sainthood alongside of Joan of Arc. Christopher Harris and George William Garden are entitled to the halo of martyrdom with no less glory than the martyrs of any other race. Toussaint Louverture's brilliancy as a soldier or a statesman outshined that of any other people, hence he's entitled to the highest place as a hero among men. Because Africa's created millions and countless millions of black men and women in war and peace, whose luster and bravery outshined that of any other people. So why not see good and perfection in ourselves? We must inspire our literature and promulgate the doctrine of our own without any apologies to the powers that be. That's why this hour is on God. Let sentiments and cross opinions go to the winds. We are entitled to our own opinions and are not obligated to or bound by the opinions of others. If others laugh at you, return the laughter to them. If they mimic you, return the compliment with equal force. Because they have no more right to dishonor, discredit you in manhood than you have in dealing with them. Honor them when they honor you. Disrespect and disregard them when they vilely treat you. Their arrogance is but skin deep, an assumption that has no foundation in morals or in law. They have sprung from the same family tree of obscurity as we have. Their history is as rude in its primitiveness as ours. Their ancestors were running wild and living in trees of branches like monkeys as ours. They made human sacrifices, ate the flesh of their own dead and wild meat from beasts for centuries, even as they have accused us of doing. Their cannibalism is more prolonged than ours. When we were embracing the banks of the Nile, they were still drinking blood out of the skulls of their conquered dead. And after our civilization had reached the noonday of progress, they were still living in holes with bats, rats, and other insects and animals. After we had already unfathomed the mystery of the stars and reduced the heavenly constellation to minute and regular calculus, they were still backwoodsmen living in ignorant darkness. Indebted to us for the benefits of civilization. They stole our arts and sciences from Africa. Then why should we be ashamed of ourselves? movements. To be reflected and resurrected by our generation and our posterity. Why should we be discouraging somebody laugh at us today? Who is to tell what tomorrow will bring forth? Did they not laugh at Christ, Moses, Muhammad? Was there not a Carthage, Greece, and Rome? So we see and have changes every day. So pray, walk, be steadfast, and be not dismayed. Because as the Jew is held together by his religion, the white race is by the assumption and the unwritten law of superiority, the Mongolian by the precious tie of blood, likewise the black man must unite in one grand racial hierarchy. Our union must know no crime, no nationality. But let us all hold together in every country and every crime, making a racial empire upon which the sun shall never set. Let no voice but your own speak to you from the depths. Let no influence but your own rouse you in time of peace and time of war. Hear all, but attend only to that which concerns you. Your allegiance shall be to your God, your race, your country. Remember that the Jew in his political and economic origins are always first the Jew. The white man is first a white man under all circumstances, so you can do no less. Be black, buy black, think black, and all else will take care of itself. Let no one inoculate you with evil doctrines to suit his own convenience. Charity begins at home. So first, for thyself be true, and thou canst not then be false to no man. For God and nature first made us what we are. And out of our own creative genius, we make ourselves what we want to be. Follow always that great law. Let God and the sky be our limit and eternity our measurement. There is no height to which you cannot climb without the active intelligence of your own mind. Mind creates, and as much as we desire in nature, we can have through the creation of our own mind. And the day being scientifically the weaker race, you shall treat others only as they treat you. But in your homes and everywhere possible, you must teach the higher development of science to your children. And make sure that we have a race of scientists far excellent. For in religion and science lies our only hope to withstand the evil designs of modern materialism. Never forget your God. Remember that we live, work, and pray for a binding racial hierarchy whose only natural, spiritual, and political limits shall be God and Africa at home and abroad. With God's dearest blessings, I leave you for a while. One love.
I have to thank you for the cordial welcome you have given me on this my return to the United States of America. I have been absent from this country for 5 months, being away in the West Indies and in Central America, traveling in the interest of the movement I represent as its President General. During my absence from America, I had occasion to observe with a great degree of disgust how narrow-minded the so-called leaders of the Negro race are. In that, immediately after I took my departure from the country, the men who are supposed to represent and lead Negro thought in America endeavored to represent me to the government of these United States by charging me with anarchy and with an intention to destroy the loyalty of Negroes to the government of this great country. These representations were made to the state and our department, which occasioned me great embarrassment in returning to these doors. As by such information to the Department of State, such instructions were given therefrom to the various consular officers outside of the country, representing the government not to give them my passport for return to this country. I had ultimately to appeal to the good services of the Honorable Charles Evans Hughes, Secretary of State, whom I believe represents truly and thoroughly the spirit of the American Constitution. I explained to him the situation and he immediately gave instructions that my passport visited for a return to the United States of America. This action of his defeated the misrepresentation made of my organization and by the enemies of the Negro race to prevent my return to my sphere of labor. With all the embarrassment, I am once more in the United States, and it is for me to avow not only my loyalty to the Constitution, laws, and government of the United States, but also avow that loyalty that is characteristic of the members of the Universal Negro Improvement Association of Government. The Universal Negro Improvement Association teaches its members everywhere to be loyal to government, but at the same time to be loyal to the great race of which we are members. As an organization, we desire our educational, industrial, social, and political advancement. Because of this desire, we are loyal to ourselves and to our constitution. But it means us loyal does not mean that we are disloyal to any government or that we have no sympathy with other races. We love humanity. We desire peace. And anything the Universal Negro Movement Association and I can do for the advancement of the cause of humanity and for the permanent establishment of peace, we shall be glad to do. I am now convinced more than ever that the Negro lacks proper leadership. The men who have led in the past are incapable. I therefore appeal to the new manhood of this race of ours to give us leadership. Leadership that is unselfish. Leadership that knows no price. We can do no better than copy the leadership of the great Anglo-Saxon race. That leadership that gave to the world William Pitt, William Ewart Gladstone, A. Disraeli, and Ed Chamberlain. And last but not least among them all, A. David Lloyd George. Fellow citizens of Africa, I greet you in the name of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League of the World. You may ask, what organization is that? It is for me to inform you that the Universal Negro Improvement Association is an organization that seeks to unite into one solid body the 400 million Negroes of the world, to link up the 15 million Negroes of the United States of America with the 20 million Negroes of the West Indies, the 40 million Negroes of South and Central America with the 280 million Negroes of Africa for the purpose of bettering our industrial, commercial, educational, social and political conditions. As you are aware, the world in which we live today is divided into separate race groups and distinct nationalities. Each race and each nationality is endeavoring to work out its own destiny to the exclusion of other races and other nationalities. We hear the cry of England for the Englishman, of France for the Frenchman, of Germany for the German, of Ireland for the Irish, of Palestine for the Jew, of Japan for the Japanese, of China for the Chinese. We of the Universal Negro Improvement Association are raising the cry of Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. There are 400 million Africans in the world who have Negro blood coursing through their veins, and we believe that the time has come to unite these 400 million people for the one common purpose of bettering their conditions. The great problem of the Negro for the last 500 years has been that of disunity. No one or no organization ever succeeded in uniting the Negro race. But within the last 4 years, the Universal Negro Improvement Association has worked wonders in bringing together in one fold 4 million organized Negroes who are scattered in all parts of the world, being in the 48 states of the American Union, all the West Indian Islands and the countries of South and Central America and Africa. These 4 million people are working to convert the rest of the 400 million scattered all over the world. And it is for this purpose that we are asking you to join our ranks and to do the best you can to help us to bring about an emancipated race. If anything praiseworthy is to be done, it must be done through unity. And it is for that reason that the Universal Negro Improvement Association calls upon every Negro in the United States to rally to its standards. We want to unite the Negro race in this country. We want every Negro to work for one common object, that of building a nation of his own on the great continent of Africa. And all Negroes all over the world are working for the establishment of a government in Africa, means that it will be realized in another few years. We want the moral and financial support of every Negro to make the dream a possibility. Already, this organization has established itself in Nigeria, West Africa, and is endeavoring to do all possible to develop that Negro country to become a great industrial and commercial commonwealth. Pioneers have been sent by this organization to Nigeria, and they are now laying the foundations upon which the 400 million Negroes of the world will build. If you believe that the Negro has a soul, if you believe that the Negro is a man, you believe the Negro was endowed with a sentence commonly given to other men by the Creator, then you must acknowledge that what other men have done, Negroes can do. We want to build up cities, nations, governments, industries of our own in Africa, so that we'll be able to have a chance to rise from the lowest.
We're just listening to a presentation of Marcus Garvey. The first was one that was done by Ron Bob Simple, who is an incredible actor who does a great, as you just heard, great presentation of Marcus Garvey. We played that because today is the anniversary of the founding of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, led by Marcus Garvey. Incredible organization, incredible leader that united Africans, you know, across the globe, beyond, you know, borders created by our oppressors. Of course, you can catch Ron Bob Simple doing a presentation of Marcus Garvey on the Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, which is going to be happening on December 5th through the 10th. This year, you can find out more information about that by going to asiuhuru.org/cruise and find out more about Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise and get on board with that. We're going to take a break now and come back with Lawrence Ham, the chairman of the People's Organization for Progress. We're going to be talking with him about a ongoing daily mobilization that POP is holding. Stay tuned here on Africa Live on thehururadio.com. This is Marcus Garvey by Burning Spear.
Garvey words come to pass. Marcus Garvey words come to pass. Can't get no food to eat. Can't get no money to spend. Can't get no food to eat. Can't get no money to spend. And you, hello.
Black is back. Yes, Black is back. And on August 20th, 2011, Africans around the world will hold an International Day of Action in opposition to attacks on Africa and African people everywhere.
Stand with us against the continuous wars waged against African people from Congo to Haiti, from Libya to Harlem. On all fronts, Africans face economic strangulation, mass incarceration, and police and military occupation of our communities.
Stand up in recognition of what these attacks really are. War. The Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations is calling on all freedom-loving people and grassroots organizations to stand against these wars.
And what better time to do it than Marcus Garvey's birthday weekend?
August for more 20th. Information, 20th. Go to www.blackisbackcoalition.org or call or email us at 202-681-7040 or info@blackisbackcoalition.org. Again, that's 202-681-7040 or info@blackisbackcoalition.org. Black is back. Is back.
Wuru, and welcome back to Africa Live here on the WhoRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyambinga Zimbabwe, and we want to talk here on Africa Live about some very important mobilizations that are occurring now in Newark, New Jersey, and organized by the People's Organization for Progress, or POP. We have on the line joining us from New Jersey, Brother Lawrence Ham, who is the chairman of POP. So I want to first of all welcome you, Chairman Ham, Uhuru.
Uhuru, brother. It's good to be with you.
It's definitely good to have you on with us. I want to, if we can just start off, before we even go into the mobilizations themselves, can you tell our listeners, any that might not be aware of POP, about your organization?
Yes. Well, first of all, if people want to get the full story, they can go to our website at www.njpop.org. That's our website, www.njpop.org. And they can also look us up on Facebook at facebook.com/People's Organization for Progress. But to give people a synopsis, the People's Organization for Progress has been in existence now for more than 27 years. Our organization was founded in 1983, but our growth has been slow and steady, and because it has been slow, a lot of people may not have heard about the People's Organization for Progress, and we're still, you know, mainly a New Jersey-based organization, but we are gradually growing into a regional organization, and I hope eventually we will become a national organization. But we were founded as a small collective back in 1983. And to give you a little background on that, I was a student, a high school student, when I got involved in the movement. Some of your listeners, if they look me up, they'll find out that I was the youngest member of a board of education in the history of the United States as a result of the student movement and the Black Power movement in Newark, New Jersey back in the 60s. I was appointed to the board of education by the first black mayor of the city of Newark, Kenneth Gibson. You know, in fact, July, brother, marks the anniversary of the Newark Rebellions, what the oppressor calls the Newark Riots, but because of its scope and nature, we call it the Newark Rebellion. You know, if it had been a riot, it could have been quelled by the police, but this was a rebellion that went on for at least 5 days. The entire Newark police force, which was the largest in the state of New Jersey, could not put it down. They called in 700 state troopers, and the Newark police, state police, the Newark police and the state police couldn't put it down. And finally, they had to call in the army, the National Guard, which occupied Newark for several weeks, and martial law was declared by the governor of New Jersey. And then the other dimension of this that makes it a rebellion is that, you know, if it just been a riot, it had just been in Newark. But this rebellion was in every city in the state of New Jersey and was part and parcel of the more than 1,000 uprisings that occurred in the United States between 1960 and 1972. There were 27 major rebellions in New Jersey in the 27 major cities that went on until the last one in Camden, New Jersey in 1971. But anyway, out of that rebellion came the Black Power movement in New Jersey. There was a, in fact, just weeks after the Newark Rebellion. It's amazing when you look at the history. I mean, even though we were under martial law, people managed to organize a Black Power conference the following week after the rebellion, and then there was a Black Power convention held at West Kinney Junior High School a year later, and a year after that, in 1969, there was a Black and Puerto Rican convention held, and out of that effort came the Community Choice team that had Kenneth Gibson and several other, at that time, Black community activists, and they were all elected. Gibson was elected mayor, and the rest were elected to the city council. In 1971, we had a student movement to improve conditions in schools in Newark. It came out of a teacher strike that occurred, the longest teacher strike up until that time in the history of the country. And we marched out of schools, and we marched down on the Gateway Hotel, and I participated in my first sit-in in March of 1971. As a result of that sit-in, I met the mayor. He saw that he had a serious student movement, and I was appointed as a full voting member, not as a student representative, a full voting member of the Newark Board of Education. But to collapse the story a little bit, we went on to become, you know, student activists for the three-year term that I was on the board. We graduated, we went to colleges, you know, we got involved in the student movements there. I led an anti-apartheid student movement on Princeton's college campus, and then came back to Newark, and, you know, we all were grown, and we had families, and we had children, but we still wanted to continue to struggle. So in 1981, we began to meet on a monthly basis. We met for a year, and out of those meetings, we decided to form an organization, and we formed the People's Organization for Progress. We ratified our first constitution in August of 1983, and we have been on the move ever since.
Right on. So can you tell us about the Daily People's Campaign for Jobs, Peace, Equality, and Justice?
Right. Well, the Daily Campaign for Jobs, Peace, Equality, and Justice grows out of the mission and purpose of the People's Organization for Progress. When we were founded, as a grassroots, independent, progressive, all-volunteer organization working for racial, social, economic justice, and peace. And we have been working around issues that relate to that purpose ever since. Right now, in this country, we have a 9.2% unemployment rate. We're just 0.8% away from, officially away from, depression level unemployment. 10% is depression level unemployment.
And that's the official numbers.
That's the official. And because the real numbers are actually much bigger, maybe twice as that. But, you know, the government they don't want to reach depression levels. So they'll massage those figures as much as they can. But sooner or later, they're not going to be able to massage those figures without telling outright lies. And at that point, they're going to have to admit that we're not in a recession. We're in a depression.
Right.
But depression level unemployment is 10%. We're at 9.2. The official national unemployment rate for Black people is 16.2%, almost twice the depression level. So we always been in the depression. In the cities, like the city of Newark, we have officially 20% unemployment. And in black and Latino communities throughout not only Newark, but most of the major cities in the United States, we have unemployment rates as high as 50%, in some places 60% unemployment rate. It's a national disgrace. When they say 9.2% unemployment, they're saying 16 million people officially on unemployment, collected unemployment benefits, but they don't count the people whose benefits have run out. When your benefits run out, they don't count you anymore. So there may be 10 more million people whose benefits have run out. So we may be talking about 26 million people in America who are unemployed. It's a national disgrace. So what we've been calling for, we say trickle-down economics is not working. You know, it's only working for the banks and the corporations.
Right.
And so in response to this, we felt we had to take some dramatic action because this unemployment leads to severe poverty. Brother, in the city of Newark, half the population, not 10%, not 20%, not 30%, half the population live at or below the poverty level. The majority of the city's population receives some form of public assistance, from welfare to unemployment to food stamps. This unemployment is causing crushing poverty in our community. And, you know, we felt we had to respond to this. Now, over the years, we have been having demonstrations and protests in response to unemployment. Several years ago, we had the largest peace march in the history of the city of Newark. Nearly 2,500 people marched for jobs jobs and peace in Newark because we formed a broad coalition called the Peace and Justice Coalition. But, you know, we felt that we had to do something that was more potent than just a periodic demonstration or a major demonstration once a year. We had to do something not just to show our opposition to the problems that exist in our community, like unemployment and so on and so forth, but we had to do something dramatic, something bold, something that was going to stir up our people, wake them up, and get them involved.
Yeah.
So, you know, like many other organizations, we study the history of black people's struggle in the United States and in the world. And when you study contemporary African-American history in the United States, there's one action that stands out that almost every black person in America knows about, even if they're student of history or not. Most people know about the Montgomery bus boycott.
Yeah.
And that's because most people know about Dr. King, and they know about Rosa Parks. But what many people don't know is the depth and the strength and the duration of the Montgomery bus boycott. The Montgomery bus boycott lasted 381 days. 60,000 black people in the city of Montgomery stopped riding those buses. And in one of the greatest shows of unity and solidarity, they walked to work every day. They organized an independent alternative transportation system organized by a Pullman car porter named E.D. Nixon. And, you know, these people stood for justice against all odds. They tried to bomb the people into submission. They tried to beat the people into submission. They arrested people. They fired people. If you were a maid at a white person's home and they found out you were supporting that boycott, you would lose your job. They bombed Dr. King's home when his family was in the house. And they even got, you know, Uncle Tom to go out and oppose. They got other black people, black ministers and black elected officials to try to split the movement and oppose it. And they even had a press conference saying they was trying to say that the boycott was over when it wasn't over. But the people stood firm, man. The people stood firm, and they broke the back of the Montgomery bus company, and that company went under once the Supreme Court ruling came out that segregation on interstate travel and on the buses was illegal, was unconstitutional. Yeah. That was the longest boycott up until that time, the longest boycott in the history of the United States, and certainly the most potent. So we look at that as a model, and we were saying if our people back in 1955, in December of 1955, in the wintertime of 1955, when they had no, you know, most black folk didn't even have telephones. Let me tell you, I was in Alabama in 1987, and I was in the town, Utah, Alabama. Most of the people in 87 didn't have phones in their house. So we take a telephone for granted, but a lot of black folk didn't even have telephones back in 55.
Right.
They didn't have no rapid speed copy machines. They didn't have no cell phones. They didn't have no computers, no PCs, no laptops, no iPods. The one thing they had was a hand crank mimeo machine.
Right.
You probably, you young brother, you probably don't even know what that is. when you had to, you wanted to make a copy of something, you got this blue stencil, and you put it in the typewriter, and you type what it is you wanted to print on that stencil, mm-hmm. and then you had to get that stencil out, and you had to attach it to a cylinder, a big cylinder. It wrapped around the cylinder. And then you had to put ink in the machine, and then you had to crank that machine. And them sisters, brother, in the Montgomery Women's Political Action Committee, I believe it was, I don't want to get the sister's name, I believe it was Diane Nash. I could be wrong. But anyway, those sisters cranked out 50,000 leaflets, brother, the night before they had the first meeting of the Montgomery bus boycott. And anyway, if our people could do all that, could do that, could have this victorious movement against the most violent racial terrorists, because that's what they were at that time. Mm-hmm. They terrorized our people. They lynched our people. They killed our people. They beat our people. If our people could boycott for 381 days, then we felt that we had to do something that could at least, it wouldn't be as strong, but at least be along the lines of what those brothers and sisters did. So we decided, we talked about this for a long time in our organization, because, you know, brother, I know you know, as a member of the Uhuru movement, you know how difficult it is to organize our people.
Yeah.
It's difficult to get people to demonstrate one day, for one day, you know, much less for 381 days. You know, so we talked about this in our organization for a long time. You're not going to believe this, but we talked about this for 6 months before we actually, and we're an organization that engages in action. We're an organization that has protests on a regular basis, but when I put this idea out to our people, they was like, I don't know. You know, we got to talk. You talking about every day we're going to have a demonstration every day? I say, yes, brothers, because we got to do something, you know, that's bold and something that will capture the imagination of our people. So it wasn't until June, we started talking about this in January of this year, in January 2011. And actually, I had been thinking about it, you know, long before that. You know, we had study sessions, and I'm going to tell you, brother, we had a one-day, an all-day study session. And you know what we read? We read Dr. King's book, Stride Toward Freedom. It's a little book. It's about 200 pages. But on the anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott several years ago, we had an all-day study session where we read through this book together, collectively, read it aloud for an entire day. We started at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And we read through, and we finished up around 10:30 that night. We read the whole book, and it was the story of the Montgomery bus boycott as Dr. King wrote it. And that's really where the source, the inspiration for this came from. And so we talked about it in our steering committee meetings first. That's like our leadership body. And we talked about it in the General Assembly. That's the meeting of all the members. And we talked, and finally we voted. Now, this is how we did it. We voted to do it, but we said we would evaluate this thing on a week-by-week basis. Our organization, People's Organization for Progress, our General Assembly meets every Thursday. We meet once a week, every week on Thursdays at 6:30 in the evening at the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Newark, New Jersey. And we said we resolved to do it. But we didn't resolve to announce the 381-day part first. We said we would do it on a trial basis on 30 days, and then after 30 days, if we still felt we would go forward, we would announce the 381 days.
Hmm.
So today, when we go out, it will be our 34th day. We have reached the 30-day mark, and on the 11th of August, we're going to have a press conference to announce publicly that we're going to do this thing for 381 days. Now, what do? We go to downtown Newark. That's where you have the most traffic, the most automobile traffic, most pedestrian traffic. And one of our members, not myself, one of our members suggested the intersection of West Market Street and Springfield Avenue. Now, this is right at the beginning of the downtown center, and it's and I think the reason she suggested that was it was across the street from Essex County College, where there are a lot of students, and I think her idea was that if they saw us out there every day, they would eventually join us. Now, college is not in session during the summer. There are very few students there for the summer session, so
mm-hmm.
we're going to reach out to them after Labor Day when the fall session begins. But at that intersection, we're at a plaza, a small plaza that's in front of the old Essex County Courthouse, and there's a statue of Abraham Lincoln there. So she suggested there because it's an intersection of two major thoroughfares, West Market Street and Springfield Avenue. Now, what's interesting about that intersection, and it's across the street from Essex County College, is that it's a high traffic area, but it's not a high pedestrian because the students they have parking areas around the college, so they can see us, but they actually don't cross through that intersection too much. In fact, very few people cross through that intersection, but there's a lot of traffic. So, you know, the first couple of days, you know, we went out there. Now we do it every day. We do it from 4:30 to 6 o'clock. That's the rush hour going home traffic. That's probably the highest traffic area, 4:30 to 6 o'clock, Monday through Friday. Then we go down further. On Saturdays, we go to Broad and Market, which is the heart of downtown Newark. That's the heart. And we do something there on Saturdays from 12 to 2, which we did yesterday. And then on Sunday, we come back to West Market and Springfield, and we do it there from 2 to 3. Now, you notice these are short duration. We are not out there like all afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
381 days is a long time, brother.
Right.
So we try to pace our people. We try not to wear people out. We try to make it something that people can do, you know, and do consistently, and try to make it so it's something that people can fit into their regular daily routine, their schedule.
Right.
Now, for the first 30 days, it has been, and for the next probably up until 60 days or so, it's only members, it's been primarily members of the People's Organization for Progress. So what we did last Tuesday, the 26th of July, we called a meeting for organizational representatives. Our members felt that even though we would try to do this as the People's Organization for Progress, that it would be better and more potent if we tried to get other organizations involved and to support it.
Right.
And our idea, theoretically, was that we would get one organization to pick a day. Now, we got all kind of organizations in Newark. When we say organizations, we mean any collective group of people. That could be a union local. That could be a church, that could be a school, that could be a community organization, radical organization, you know, block, club, whatever.
Yeah.
And we said, surely, fraternities and sororities and so on and so forth. So we said, surely, if you put all those together, there must be more than 300. You know, so, you know, our theory is to try to get each group, each other organization, each other collective entity to pick a day. Mm-hmm. So we had a meeting on the 26th of July, and we had about 40 representatives of different organizations came to that meeting. and it was attended. There were representatives there of union locals. There were pastors there. I mean, Bethany, where we meet, that's one of the major churches, or where we had that meeting, that's one of the major churches in Newark. And some of the other major churches, they had their own representatives there. And in addition, there's a Newark, North Jersey Committee of Black Churchmen. They were officially represented. So we had union locals, we had churches, we had mosques, the Nation of Islam. The minister, the head of the Nation of Islam, was there. We had other progressive organizations, and so on and so forth.
And these were Newark-based organizations, or all over New Jersey?
These are primarily Newark-based.
Okay.
Newark-based for now, but we spread out, you know.
Okay.
And so they came, and we didn't ask them for an endorsement on the spot. We said, we asked them to do several things. One, go back and discuss it with your organization to endorse the campaign. Two, to pick a day after Labor Day, because, see, we wanted to give people time to work through this thing and time to get their people organized, so when they come out with more than one or two people. You know, they come out with a, with a group of people.
Yeah.
You know, and three, we asked them to endorse a larger demonstration on April 4th, the anniversary of Dr. King's assassination, which we had one. We had the largest one. We had nearly 1,000 people march with us on April 4th of 2011. And we wanted to do it again, hoping that it won't be 1,000, but maybe 5,000 or more, you know. And then the fourth thing we asked to do was bring back lists of other groups and individuals that we should include in this coalition. And the fifth thing was that we would come back together. We're coming back together again to assess the effort on August the 30th. Reach out to organizations with this principle of each group picking a day to come out. And then to top it off, although it wasn't directly a part of the campaign, but it has come. Mm-hmm. We had Representative Cynthia McKinney come to Newark Thursday night, brother, and it was packed out. We had the meeting at Abyssinian Baptist Church, and we gave that sister a hero's welcome because, you know, she's put everything on the line for our people with her forthright stands on for peace, and, you know, the immediate issue she was discussing was Libya. She gave us an eyewitness report. She was in Libya when the bombing had begun.
Yeah.
And she gave us an eyewitness report. And she also talked about our campaign, you know, so all those people came out, gave us a chance to talk about the campaign. So, that's the organizational issue, organizational structure.
If I can interrupt you just for a minute,
Chairman. I'm sorry, brother, be so long with you.
No, you're good. I think we're getting some very good information. We want to, first of all, invite people to call in. We've got a caller on the line, but I want to invite everybody to call in and participate in this discussion that we're having. You can call the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599. Or you can call the UK number, which is 020-8133-6629, or call us through Skype for free anywhere in the African world. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and that's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. We have a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, sir, Uhuru. This is Jalali Norman.
Uhuru.
I was just calling to say that I'm listening on the phone for the first time. That sounds great.
Right on, right on.
Thank you.
Just want to give
Thank you
a vote of confidence. And Cynthia McKinney came to Toronto, and we gave her a welcome up here, and we support her efforts.
Excellent.
I shouldn't say we. Many of us do. Some of us don't, of course. You know, it's a dialectical situation. Some do, some don't, but I'm standing on the side of those who do.
Right on.
Excellent.
All right.
All right, Uhuru.
Thank you, Uhuru.
And I want to ask Chairman Ham, Are you reaching out also to organizations beyond New Jersey? Because one thing I want to do, even in this program now, is call on other organizations, other people who are listening from other locations. We just had a brother call in from Canada.
Wow.
There are people who I know are listening from various locations. I want to call on people who are listening to support this campaign. And if you're part of an organization, to talk to your organization about supporting this campaign, endorsing this campaign, and taking on a day, you know.
Well, yes, we are reaching. In fact, the very first national organization that we discussed this with was Impedum, and I had a direct discussion with Chairman O'Malley Yeshitela, and I imagine that's how this interview has come about.
Yeah.
And I want to say that he was the first national leader to hear about this campaign and to endorse it. And we would like this to become a national movement, because, remember, it started in Montgomery, right? It was the Montgomery bus boycott that eventually grew into the civil rights movement. I mean, once that Montgomery bus boycott got off the ground and was successful, that inspired other civil rights activities, protests, demonstrations in other places around the country, first in solidarity with Montgomery, and then people began to boycott their own bus companies and own segregated facilities. And that's how we hope this thing would catch on. We hope that, first of all, we hope that organizations all around the state, all around the region, and all around the country will come to Newark, will pick a day and come to Newark and demonstrate with us at least one day. And then when you go back to your respective communities throughout the country, and I should say countries, because maybe this thing could become international, you know, and then do similar activities in solidarity and for your own, you know, in your own interest in your communities. So, yes, we want this to be embraced by a national organization. We want their participation. We want them to come to Newark and get on that picket line with us, and we want them to go back to their own communities and do similar activities. I just want to also, brother, mention some of the demands.
Yes.
It is a campaign for jobs, peace, equality, and justice. And, you know, just a few of the demands. The number one demand is we're calling for the creation of a national jobs program. You know, they're calling this a jobless recovery. We say there's no such thing as a jobless recovery. If I'm unemployed, you unemployed, my sister, my brother, my husband, my wife, they're unemployed. What kind of recovery is that?
Who's recovering?
That's right. You know who it is a recovery for. Mm-hmm. It's a recovery for the banks and the corporations that have made record profits in the midst of this ocean of human suffering. That's mm-hmm. why they're saying the recovery, because the capitalists, they're recovering profits.
Yes.
But the masses of the people, only thing we're getting is more suffering. You know, last month they announced the new unemployment figures. Now, it's the first time in U.S. history after a recession of this duration that unemployment actually went up. That's why, you know, they can only push this lie for so long about this being a recession. We're in a depression. And it's the first time in a recession. We've had many recessions. I think it's been something like 17 recessions since World War II that you actually had the unemployment continue to rise. It was 9.1. It's now 9.2. They expected 90,000 new jobs to be created. Only 18,000 new jobs are supposed to be only 18,000 new jobs were created. And you know how many jobs we need a month to actually pull us out? 300,000 jobs a month have to be created. And so they're saying, well, we're going to let the marketplace take care of this, the free hand of the marketplace, you know, as if there's some kind of magic, you know, in the market. And the only thing the market is going to do is further immiserate the people. We're saying there has to be direct intervention. When there was a Great Depression in this country in the 1930s, the masses of people rose up in militant demonstrations of all kinds across the country. Roosevelt, the Congress, knew they had to do something or there might be a revolution in America. So they began to implement the reforms, the New Deal reforms. And you know, a lot of people look at those as they look at the progressive character of them, and some of them were progressive, you know. But the fact of the matter is they were a response to the militancy that was going on in the country. But they created a national jobs program called the WPA, the Works Progress Administration. And over just a couple of years, they put 11 million people back to work. You know, so we're saying we need, and do you know, people don't know, but there are actually more people unemployed today than there was during the Great Depression. Now, they tell you, well, they had 20, 25% unemployment, but the population was only half of what it is today. So we actually numerically, in absolute numbers, have more people unemployed today than were unemployed during the Depression. So we're saying there's got to be a jobs program. We don't want no more minimum wage job.
Right.
The minimum wage is a slave wage.
Yes.
Anybody that's worked the minimum wage knows that. The only thing you can do with a minimum wage is have enough money to get yourself dressed, buy your bus card, and get yourself back and forth to work. That's the only, you can't pay rent on no minimum wage. You can't raise a family on no minimum wage. That's why people are working two and three jobs. I don't know how they do it. People work three jobs, you got to be working 24 hours around the clock. People are killing themselves. People are working more hours in America than they've ever worked before in the history of this country. We're saying they got to be jobs at a living wage or a minimum at a union wage. Those are the jobs we need. So we're saying there must be a national jobs program. We're calling for an end to the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. We want an end to those wars. A fraction of the $4 trillion that has been spent on the wars, a fraction of that could put every unemployed person in America back to work today. So we say, stop spending the money on those wars and spend that money, our tax dollars. That ain't somebody else's money. That's our money. You know, spend that money on home, at home, to take care of the people's needs. We're saying preserve workers' rights and collective bargaining. They're trying to destroy all the unions across this country, and they're particularly aiming at public sector unions. And you know who that hurts? That hurts the black community the most.
Exactly.
Because most black people work in the public sector. They work for the municipal government, the state government, the federal government, the county government. You know, that they work in some form of public agencies, the post office, and so on and so forth. So they're trying to destroy these unions so that they can do what? So they can pay everybody the minimum wage. That's really what this is about. This is about lowering the wages and increasing the profits.
Yes.
Lowering the wages of working people, increasing the profits of the rich people. We're calling for a moratorium on home foreclosures. More people have lost their homes to foreclosure in the last 24 months than in the previous history of this country. More black wealth has been lost in the last 24 months than since slavery. You know why? Because most poor black people, if they got any little bit of money, their money is tied up in their house. That's black people's major form of wealth, their home. And half of the 2 million home foreclosures have been foreclosures on black people's houses. We oppose the privatization of public education. Public education was an institution that grew up out of the overthrow of slavery. You know, when we overthrew slavery, one of the first things free black people started doing was setting up public schools. You know, and that's one of the roots of public education for all children, was Reconstruction, you know, for all children in this country. So now they got these charter school movements going on across the country. That is part and parcel of an attempt to dismantle public education in this country. So we're opposing privatization of public education. We're calling for universal national health care. 47 million people in this country have no health insurance, can't afford to see a doctor or a dentist. We're saying if Canada next door can have a national health care program, you know, we should have a national health care program.
Yeah.
President Obama, when he was Senator Obama, he supported universal health care. But then when he became President Obama, you know, the best thing he could do was a public option, and they rejected that. So we're saying, no, we got to have a national health care program. And finally, we're saying we need affordable college education for all our children. They are creating a class of indentured servants in America. Our children are graduating from these colleges with $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 in loans.
just from undergraduate school. Some of them will never pay these. They'll be working all their working life and will still be paying off these loans. It is the re-enslavement of our community. So those are some of the major demands of our campaign for jobs, peace, equality, and justice.
Yes. Yes. I think that's right on. I think that's right on. And anybody ought to be able to unite with that. You know, not just the African community, but anybody who can stand for justice ought to be able to unite with that.
Yes, and that was the purpose of having a few demands, you know, like the minimum program demands, so that we could get as many people as possible to unite around this program so that we can make... So let me tell you the truth, brother. Right now, we put on average 10 to 20 people out on this plaza every day, 10 to 20. You know, some days it's 10. It's never less than 10. Some days it's 20. And like I said, we've done this for 34 days. But what we're trying to do is organize this thing. And it's amazing. You know, when we first started, we were kind of apprehensive, you know, a little shy, a little reticent about being out there. But what we did is something novel for us. It's probably been done by other people in other places. Now, since we didn't have a lot of pedestrian traffic, we had automobile traffic. We had to find a way to connect with the people in their cars. So eventually what we started doing, we had our loudspeaker system out there with us, and we would, like, read the demands and stuff, and we'd say over the loudspeaker, we'd say, if you agree that we need a national jobs program, honk your horn.
Yeah.
Man, the people would start honking their horns. Now we come out there, we not even set up. We haven't even put our signs up or anything. People start riding by, they see us because we have our yellow pop shirts. So they start honking the horns, man. It's deep, you know.
Yeah.
It's really deep. And it's uplifting because, you know, people drive by before, they didn't say, you didn't know if you were really connecting. But now, brother, you hear them horns going off. It's so deep. Let me tell you how deep this thing is. It's so deep that police cars, when they ride by, they honk their horn sometimes. They wouldn't want it to be told, but some police be honking their horn. Because what happened? Because in Newark, they have laid off 400 police. Do you know that? Did you hear about that? They laid off 400 policemen. Now, we used to be public enemy, probably still are, public enemy number one of the police, because we was raising such fan about police brutality.
Yeah.
Newark. In fact, the Justice Department is coming to our meeting on August, I think, the 18th, to conduct interviews with people who've been the victims of police brutality.
Hmm.
We supported the ACLU with their petition for the Justice Department to come in and do a full investigation because there are 400 unresolved cases of police abuse, misconduct, and brutality in Newark. And they're coming. They've done preliminary investigation, and they're coming. And the Justice Department's coming to our meeting to meet one-on-one with people who've been the victims of police brutality. But that notwithstanding, you know, some of the police, when they drive by, they honk their horn because they getting laid off, you know. And you know what happens. You know who the last hired is, right? Black people. And you know who the first fired is, black people.
Yeah.
You know, so now a lot of these city workers who have gotten laid off, not just the police, the firemen, the sanitation, and so forth, you know, they find themselves becoming, growing into solidarity with this effort, you know, because the whole city is suffering. That it's not just the black community; it's the whole city is suffering. You can see it. The streets are so tore up and raggedy because they can't do the numbers of repairs they did before. You know, when you had the full sanitation department, so they can fix these streets in a matter of weeks. Now you got one or two crews working. How many streets can one or two crews fix? You know, over time. So the streets, potholes, you know, and all kind of stuff, and you can just see the deterioration taking place before your eyes. So now I'm just saying that we found a way now to connect with the flow of automobile traffic, and if anybody comes over, they'll see it. They'll see it themselves. They'll see how the people honk their horns and blow their horns in solidarity. So when the traffic lights turn red, we have some people whose job is to give out leaflets. So we're able to give out leaflets with the demands on them and telling people where to meet where the next meeting is about this and so on and so forth. We have people on the loudspeaker to get people to honk their horn. And then we have these huge 6-foot banners, very lightweight, made of plastic, that have our messages on we demand jobs at a living wage, no more layoffs, no more budget cuts, jobs, peace, and equality. You have these big 6-foot banners so people can see them from a distance, see clearly, and they know what it is. They know why it is that we're out there. They don't just see 10 people standing around giving out leaves. They see 10 people. They hear the message. You know, they see the message on the banners, and they get the message when we give them the leaflet.
Right on. That's incredible. I'm just listening to what you're saying. I'm seeing an incredible, you know, process that's happening up there in New Jersey. I want to note to our listeners, we are talking live right now with Lawrence Ham, the chairman of the People's Organization for Progress, about the Daily People's Campaign for Jobs, Peace, Equality, and Justice, an incredible campaign that's been going on for a little more than 30 days now, and is going to be going on for, you said 381
days, brother, 381. And we hope. Right, 381 days we're going to try to do this, which is the length of the Montgomery bus boycott. And it is our hope, it is our sincere desire. Like I tell you, we're out there every day, 10 to 20 people. But we're hoping that 10 to 20 will grow to 30 to 40, 50 to 60. And even though 100 may not seem like a lot of people, I'm telling you something. We can get to a point where we have 100 people out there every day. It's going to transform the political environment in Newark. Mm-hmm. Because we haven't been, I'm so thankful that your radio show is giving us this national coverage. You're the first one. You're the first one to take this message about what we're doing nationally, and I want to tell you how grateful and deeply appreciative and thankful I am for this interview today, and for Chairman O'Malley to set it up. He doesn't know how grateful I am. But I want to say that if we were to get to a point where we had 100 people out there every day, it would transform the political environment in North. Because really, what do the papers do? The papers report on what's going on in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, but there's the formal channels of communication.
Mm-hmm.
The radio, the television, the newspapers, but everybody know in the community is the informal channel, which is the grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole lot that goes on in our community that people know about that ain't in the papers.
Yeah.
You know, it ain't in the newspapers, but what carries it? The grapevine. So the press has whited us out. They don't want no movement for jobs, peace, equality, and justice to arise. They don't want no thousands of people marching their door. So they haven't given us any coverage yet.
Right.
But they're going to come to a point, one, where they can't ignore it, and two, even if they continue to ignore it, the hundreds of people who pass these demonstrations every day, they're going to do what? They're going to go home and tell their family about it, mm-hmm. tell their neighbor about it, tell their friends about it at work. You know, that's one of the reasons why we voted to continue, because we've been taking a vote every week. Shall we continue these daily protests? And each week, and I'm going to tell you the truth. There's been some dissent, even in our membership. You know, I know I'm not supposed to air the dirty laundry, right? But even in our membership, I want to be honest, because I want to give people a complete picture of how this thing looks. You know, so people will be walking away. All the people in North are unified. They're moving forward in unity, arms locked, and everything. No, they like that. It's struggle externally and it's struggle internally.
Mm-hmm.
And there are members who, with good reason, have said, well, maybe we should do it once a week, or maybe we should do it once a month. But the majority have voted to continue. And why do they continue? Like one sister said at our last meeting, in fact, we had to have an extraordinary general membership meeting on a Saturday, which was last Saturday, we voted to continue. And one of the reasons she said, because she knows it's an impact. Now, she works she works for a government agency. And she says that people that hardly ever speak to her at work, they know she's in pop. you know, they have actually come up to her and said, yeah, we see your people out there every day. Tell me more about this. And so she's saying that even though we might not think we're having that much of an impact, that we are having an impact. That people are already talking about it.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm saying, that if we have 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 people a day out there, I'm telling you that in time, it will transform the political environment in Newark, and it will transform, you know, the movement. I really believe that. I really believe that that will happen if we can stay the course.
Yeah.
You know, if we can keep, if we can stay in there. You know, it's easy in the summertime, but we see you down there in Florida. Y'all, that's some mild weather. Things you got to watch out for is hurricanes. You know, it's warm, but you got Mother Nature out there tearing up people's houses and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but brother, we get some cold winters up here, man.
Yeah.
Cold winters up here. So the real test is going to come like when we get to January. Even December is not that bad. But you get to January, February, even March, those are really cold months up here. So, you know, we'll see, you know, how things fare. But I believe that if we can keep this thing going, if we can increase the numbers of people participating, that even if they continue to white us out in the media, that this thing will grow and spread and be embraced by our community.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we got a little bit of time left, Chairman Hamm, and I want to... just while we have you on the line, you know, raise a question with you. You know, we were told by a lot of people who called themselves progressives, activists, and revolutionaries, et cetera, that the election of Barack Obama, a black president, was going to change the situation for black people, you know. And, of course, the Black is Back Coalition, of which People's Organization for Progress is a member, called the question. And said that a black face on a white power system is still going to be white power. What do you say to those who took that position then today in light of how things are now that makes it necessary for us to have a daily people's campaign for jobs, peace, equality, and justice?
I'm saying that the people who said that, including Chairman O'Malley Ashitella and the Black is Back Coalition and those who are those groups that are members of that coalition, especially like people like Brother Glenn Ford from the Black Agenda Report, who I think you must be familiar with.
Yeah.
They are vindicated. They have been proven to be true. And it is clearly we see a situation now that clearly, you know, we see white power's agenda continues to be carried out. In fact, in some respects, more vigorously than the Bush administration carried it out.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, there are examples such as the closing of Guantanamo, the delaying of removing troops. They announced, we're going to bring troops home in 2011. And then when we get to 2011, well, we got to train Afghans, so we might have to stay here until 2012. I mean, just think about this. We elected the first president of African descent in the United States. And what does he do? He bombs Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a telling comment. And I know Barack Obama is an intelligent man. I know that this must be crossing his mind. Now, I'm not saying, you know, he's obviously the one that's doing the bombing, so I'm not saying that he's in any way regretful, but I'm sure the irony of this, not only that, I mean, he's not a person of the descent of African slaves in America. He is a descendant of an African. You know, his father was a Kenyan. You know, and Kenya, if you look at the continent, you look at the map, ain't that far from Libya.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few countries away from Libya.
Yeah.
I'm sure this irony must cross his mind, and it's a terrible irony. Mm-hmm. And I think black people, if they had known that this was going to be the outcome, they might have thought about it real hard.
Yeah.
The system that we're fighting, brother, is so complex why it's been in power for so long. You know, they're not in power for this length of time because they're stupid. They do stupid stuff and they make mistakes. And that's why reforms are able to get through sometimes. But this system is so versatile and so able to co-opt people, you know. But yes, the Obama administration has done things that the Bush administration has not done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, continues to limit our rights. You know, they just reenacted the Patriot Act provisions, and these laws become more and more draconian. You know, we're in more wars. I mean, we thought we would elect Obama and we'd be out of Afghanistan. That's why I think most people voted for him. They thought he was going in the war, you know, but they really weren't reading what he was saying or not listening to the whole speech, you know, because even early on, Obama, you know, his attitude toward the Iraq war was that war was wrong, but, you know, he never said that about the Afghan war, the Afghanistan war, you know. And if you read what he was saying, you know, read his speeches and stuff before he got elected, you know, some of it's kind of, it kind of tells you the direction that he was going,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I have to say, I have to be honest. I'm going to be honest with the listening audience. You know, the People's Organization for Progress, we had fierce debates in our organization about Barack Obama for more than a year, brother. It took us a year before we finally decided to officially, we did officially endorse his campaign. You know, we wanted to see the brother get elected. But it was only after, when I say fierce, I mean some people were to quit the organization. You know, because some folks who had, like, really clear thinking, advanced consciousness, you know, they saw him as the black face of imperialism. This is going to be the black face of imperialism. This is going to enable U.S. imperialism to do things that it couldn't have done with the white face of George Bush.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, a lot of our people, you know, consciousness is uneven, mm-hmm. you know, and the majority of organizations, although I think everybody within POP agreed on that fact, I think some people felt that this was something we had to do, even if we agreed totally with what folks were saying about him being the black face of opposition, that this was something that black people would have to go through. See, in North, we went through the same thing, but on a lower level. The enthusiasm and fervor that you see for Barack Obama in 2008, you had that enthusiasm and fervor times 10 for Ken Gibson when we elected the first black man in Newark. Newark had been a black city for almost 10 years before we were able to get one black councilman, you know?
Yeah.
And so the election of Ken Gibson had that same. When I tell you, brother, that people literally danced down Broad Street, that is no exaggeration. People, when it was announced that Gibson had won, people poured out of the campaign headquarters, got in the street, and were literally dancing down the streets in 1970. When Ken Gibson got elected. But what happened? We thought that by electing Gibson, all we had to do was put the black face in the high place, and the brother would take care of us. You
right.
know, everything would be taken care of. It was very simplistic. It was not, we did not have a thoroughgoing political economic analysis. But, you know, there were some that did, like Amiri Baraka. He understood the political economic dynamics of what was going on. But there, it was a phase that we had to go through. People had to go through this and understand, come to an understanding through their lived experience that just electing black people, that in and of itself is not going to change your everyday life. That you must have, as Dr. King said, a radical transformation of the socioeconomic system. He says that in his book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community, in the chapter called The World House. He says there must be a radical redistribution of power and wealth in this system,
yeah.
in this society, and there must be a radical transformation of our socioeconomic system. That is what is going to eventually change the quality of people,
yeah.
not just electing people to office.
Yeah. Well,
and I just say that to say that we went through that in Newark, and going through this with Barack Obama may be like a phase that we had to go through in order to help those who couldn't even understand it before to more better understand that it's not electing a president, that it is in fact the transformation of this capitalist system that mm-hmm. must occur before we can get an improvement in the quality of life.
Yeah. I think even the fact that they put forward a Barack Obama in the first place is an indication of how deep the crisis for this system is and how it needed to in order to solve that crisis, give you somebody who looks like you, looks like the people who they have to attack even harder than they had been attacking before in order to try to hold this thing together.
That's right. It's paradoxical, right? Because on the one hand, by having a black face there in the White House, it makes it hard. We see, I mean, there's been no major peace demonstration since Obama had been elected, right? Like,
right.
No real big national mobilizations like there were under Bush. It is, we see that it makes it harder. But on the other hand, it's a two-edged sword. It makes it harder for some people to attack policies of the White House. But on the other hand, I'm telling you, it's also radicalizing people. I'm telling you, I talk to people in the street, and already, even among a lot of people, there's a lot of discontent with Obama because they say, man, ain't nothing changed for me since he's been elected. But the issue is complex, brother. It's a complex issue, and we got to be ready for the boomerangs that they're going to throw at us, you know, because they create a situation now where they're going to, for some people, make some people have to choose, because there's some people that are not going to vote at all, who do not believe that these elections are legitimate. They're not just not voting because they're apathetic. They're not voting because they don't think these elections are legitimate. And there's some people who are going to vote third party, whether or not that third party has a snowball chance in hell of winning the election.
Right.
You know, so you're going to have those tendencies. But, you know, this thing is also radicalizing people. And the system is so slick, they're going to throw a boomerang at us, you know, because they're going to put up some monster. They're going to make it a choice between some right-wing fascist monster and Barack Obama, the imperialist, you know, the well-spoken, you know, spokesman for international, you know, the international capitalist system, you know. And what are people going to do? I'm telling you, right now, be prepared for the fact that with everything we know and everything that has gone down, there's going to still be a large section of the black community that's probably going to support Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on who they put up there, he probably may still get reelected. But even if that's the case, I'm telling you, people are still being radicalized.
Yeah.
Because the longer he's in there, the more they are saying that just having a black person as president is not changing my life. In fact, more people are unemployed now than there were when Obama came to office in 08.
Yeah.
You know, and so on and so forth.
We are pretty much out of time. I wanna ask you, though, if there's anything you'd like to say in closing, and also how people can get in touch with Pop or get connected with this campaign.
Yes. Well, first of all, directly, people can contact the People's Organization for Progress by calling 973-801-0001, 973-801-0001. Or they can go to our website at www.njpop.org. That's www.njpop.org. Or they can go to facebook.com/People's Organization for Progress. And those are some of the ways that they can contact us. And before we close out here, I just want to say, U.S. out of Libya. This is an unjust, illegal war.
Yes.
It's the spear point for the recolonization of Africa.
Mm.
And if it was only that, you know, it would be one thing. But this is not only just about the recolonization of Africa. This is about the redivision of the world and two diametrically opposed perspectives. One perspective that says the world's resources must be used in a humane way for the uplift of all humanity, and another perspective that says the world's resources must be used to enrich 1% of the world's population. and make them even richer. That's what we have here, the recolonization of Africa and the redivision of the world, you know, among the imperialist powers, and we have to oppose that.
Right.
And we support the demonstrations that Impede and the Uhuru movement have been calling. I believe it's for August 20th. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, we support that, and we'll take one of our daily demonstrations on the 20th and use that in support, make that in support of the effort to get the U.S. out of Africa.
Right on. Right on. Well, I want to thank you so much, Chairman Lawrence Ham, for coming on and talking with us about the daily campaign, daily people's campaign for jobs, peace, equality, and justice happening there in Newark, New Jersey. Again, I want to call on people who are listening to support that campaign. If you have an organization, to call on your organization to go into Newark, New Jersey and take a day, you know, to coordinate, you know, that demonstration. And just do all you can to support this incredible organization on the ground there in Newark, New Jersey. Again, I want to thank you for coming on and talking with us about it. And, you know, we really appreciate that.
Well, thank you, brother. I thank you. You've given me more time than all the other media in the Northeast combined this morning. And I'm so thankful that you have a radio station and a radio program that can get this done. And I thank you for your support. And I tell the comrades all over the world to keep fighting, you know, because ultimately we will win. You know, the odds are against us, but ultimately we are going to win, you know.
Right on. So we're gonna take a break here and come back in just a moment with the tail end of Africa Live here on UhuruRadio.com. We're gonna be talking with participants of the Freedom Summer Project happening down here in St. Petersburg, Florida, where we're broadcasting the show from now. So stick with us here on Africa Live on UhuruRadio.com.
How is it possible that people just die every day in a land so rich? What about them?
Yeah.
What about them?
That's real. Be a solid.
Where you at?
My people's rise and take them to the streets.
Where you at?
Organizing, man, this crisis is deep.
And where you at?
But we ain't seen you in a couple of weeks. Don't let them have y'all scared to speak. Raise up the fight to go free.
Where you at?
In the streets, to the gutters, the alley.
And where you at?
The bus stops, barbershops, and the traps.
And where you at?
At the rally, listening to Chairman O'Malley. From Guinea Corn to Greed to Cali, scream like powers, how you find?
I used to be young and foolish, didn't know what to do with my life. But I was a clue, the situation was ruined. If life is a game, then Africans, we had to be losing. That's when I went to school and came in contact with the movement. That's when I finally found out that I was an African. It wasn't no magic folks back when the crackers started to trap again. From back then up until right now, it was always fighting. Don't even think that we settling down. No civil rights, man, get it right, man. Every Africa is our lifeline. So now we'll organize and win this thing in our lifetime. It's fight time, ding. Around the world, people's just bucking. And if you think that you gon' pray it away, then good luck, cause you gon' need it. In fact, you weed it a bit too much. These crackers giving out nothing but beatings. And dude, that sucks. But while you duck and tell you what you need to look at the facts, ain't the people that got us some freedom without fighting back. So where you at?
My people's ride and take them to the streets.
And where you at?
Organizing, man, this crisis is deep.
Where you at?
But we ain't seen you in a couple of weeks. Don't let them have y'all stand to speak.
Where you at?
In the streets, chilling, gutters, and alley.
And where you at?
The bus stops, barbershops, and the traps.
And where you at?
At the rally, listening to Chairman O'Malley. From Candy Corn to Clear to Cali Street, like powers, how you find?
You can find me in Southeast D.C., 5 minutes away from where George Bush and them stayed. Where they equip young Africans with AKs and CRACK to commit violence horizontally, but ironically, we bust back with philosophy. Now we looking for enemies, finding new use for Hennessy. Molotov ring a bell to me. Going to my seats, we getting free. Getting cheese, not a concern to me. Crackers hurting me, trigonometry. Matter of fact, they scared of me, cause I'm down with the people. Bust rounds for the people. If you down with the beast, go down for your people.
Black. Who is it? A true movement with a new vision of who isn't bullshitting. We fool clippin' smooth niggas, pull triggers for you snitches. Niggas for you my comrades from here to Sierra Leone. I say these raps, play these tracks, spray these gats. That's where we at, that's where we at.
Black is back, yes, black is back. And on August 20th, 2011, Africans around the world will hold an International Day of Action in opposition to attacks on Africa and African people everywhere.
Stand with us against the continuous wars waged against African people from Congo to Haiti, from Libya to Harlem. On all fronts. Africans face economic strangulation, mass incarceration, and police and military occupation of our communities.
Stand up in recognition of what these attacks really are. War. The Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations is calling on all freedom-loving people and grassroots organizations to stand against these wars.
And what better time to do it than Marcus Garvey's birthday weekend?
August For more 20th. Information, 20th. Go to www.blackisbackcoalition.org or call or email us at 202-681-7040 or info@blackisbackcoalition.org. Again, that's 202-681-7040. Or info@blackisbackcoalition.org. Black is back. Is back.
Con un saco,
¿oíste?
Por la izquierda, un dato. No mezclar escasez con falta de honradez.
Por lo menos,
eso trato. Me bato everyday con suficiente olfato para no caer en desacato. A no, no ser que haya maltrato. 4, 5, 6. Hace rato que vengo partiendo todos los acetatos. La letra diseñó cuando hay nada más boniato y arroz. Pero gracias a Dios que tengo siempre algo en el plato. Ato, ponto y arami. Mosquetero yo que vivo aquí. Vamos.
Cherep, 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 cherep. Cherep, cherep, cherep.
La vida.
Cherep, 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 cherep. Cherep, cherep, cherep.
La vida.
Detrás de la fachada, donde la rutina clava su mirada en la barriada. Vivo, oyendo voces de centavos, raspando en el invento, sigo. Trabadan las contradicciones que ponen en jaque mis aspiraciones. Y me desdoblo imitando el movimiento natatorio de los tiburones. Surgen canciones a la sombra del estrés que sufro cada vez que tengo que pensar que es lo que voy a meter en la cazuela.
Aplico ciencia de no perder paciencia cuando la carencia se evidencia más. Ahora mismo no hay técnica.
Agua.
Me haría falta un buen scratch allá atrás.
Hay necesidad, a la vez pasa. Nadie sabe lo que tiene hasta que sas. Te vas y no sabes dónde estás.
¿Qué?
¿Será ley de la vida quizás?
Vamos.
Cherep, 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 cherep. Cherep, cherep, cherep.
La vida.
Cherep, 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 cherep.
Oye, pero debe de
cherep, 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 cherep.
La vida. Yo. Estos son los rollos que traen las memorias de mi subdesarrollo. La pobreza no me corta el cuello, lo que hace más bien es un ensayo. Ya yo tengo callos de tanta y tanta relación microfobida. Me rodea el ten cuidado con lo que digas.
Tienes que decir las cosas con tacto,
¿no? Pero es el contexto quien me hace los textos. Yo solo pongo el resto, dialecto presto para cualquier batalla. Así que mira, vaya.
La vida es nuestra vida.
La vida. La vida.
Woo-roo. And welcome back to Africa Live here on WhoRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we were talking before the break with Lawrence Ham, the chairman of the People's Organization for Progress, that is engaged in a daily people's campaign for jobs, peace, equality, and justice up there in Newark, New Jersey. We implore people to go to their website and check it out and participate in that. You can check them out at www.njpop.org. That's NJ for New Jersey, POP for People's Organization for Progress.org, and see if you can see your way to participate in that campaign. We are now in the studio with some comrades from the Freedom Summer Project. Those of you who have been listening in for the past couple of weeks have been hearing and perhaps even talking with people who have been participating in Freedom Summer Project from places all around the U.S. and other places in the world. We only got a few minutes left, and I want to make sure to talk with a couple comrades who are here. We have joining us in the studio right now Princess Williams, who is an organizer locally here in St. Petersburg, Florida, where the Summer Project is happening from, for the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. We also have in studio with us Charo Walker, who is an organizer out of Bahamas, Nassau, Bahamas, which is a beautiful place, beautiful African people, all those serious conditions for our people, despite, you know, what you see in brochures, etc. So I think we're going to be joined in a little bit, if he makes it in time, by Xavier McGregor, who, if you were listening a couple of weeks ago, you would have heard on, who came into town, was a fierce worker, had to leave, and apparently has found his way back for the Summer Project. So, Uhuru comrades, first of all, Uhuru, and welcome. We got just a few minutes. I just want to first of all see how people are experiencing Freedom Summer. Charo, you've been here for about a week now, from Bahamas, and I just want to see first of all how you have been experiencing this process, of the Summer Project.
Well, for me, coming from the Bahamas, it's been a good experience, mainly because it breaks the isolation. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're in the Bahamas and you have comrades in the U.S. or wherever else, it's just me and, Alex Morley, who is here from Nassau as well. It's just the two of us pretty much organizing in Nassau. So it's really good to be here among comrades, sharing experiences and learning from each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you've been doing a lot of street work this week.
Yes. That was a good learning experience as well. Just to go in the streets and meet the people, be with the people, that's so important in this work. Mm. And this experience showed me that you cannot do it without doing that.
Yeah.
You know, going out in the streets. So we're definitely going to take that back to Nassau.
Yeah.
Really hitting the streets hard and getting the information out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Princess, you are a native of, well,
let me not say native, but you grew up here in St. Pete. You were born here in St. Pete, and so you are familiar with the terrain. You're familiar with people here in the city. Is there a different experience you get out in the community, you know, relating to folk as you're organizing than just being out there, you know, as a St. Pete person?
I would say definitely I have a different experience when I go out to organize. For one, you know, I used to be out there, you know, known as, you know, Bella, this rapper and everything. Mm-hmm. So that's how they perceive me, as a rap artist, not a revolutionary, not no one who's trying to change conditions for people. So sometimes when I do go out, I find a struggle and a battle to win my peers and, you know, my friends to this movement and to help me organize. But, you know, that still doesn't mean we stop, because it's a struggle. So we mm-hmm. just gonna struggle right through that.
Yeah. Have you seen people like who are fans of yours, you mm-hmm. know, musically, you know, how have they responded with seeing you in the street as an organizer?
Well, it's different for them, definitely, but I can say I have support from most of them. You know, anytime that we organize anything and I ask them to be a part, they're a part. You know, it's no problem. You know, they do it on the strength of the love and that they see that I have for this movement mm-hmm. and, you know, that we do need to change the conditions and the terms in our African communities everywhere, so they're willing to participate.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. So X has joined us. Brother Xavier McGregor has joined us in the studio. Uhura, bruh.
Uhura.
Thought we weren't going to get you in time. You got a couple minutes left.
Setting up.
Yeah. On the grind, always. So you were here near the beginning of the summer project and was here for a while, and then you had to go back home. What are you doing here?
Well, originally, you know, we only planned to be out here for a week, but the experience was that amazing. I felt it was necessary to come back out here. I really want to attend the Black Community Convention, and I'm actually trying to get as many of my friends out here as possible. It's difficult being all the way on the other side of the country, but, you know, next time we'll be more prepared, we'll raise the funds and we'll get out here. But, you know, I'm feeding them back the information over Facebook and calling them, and, you know, everybody's real receptive of what's going on out here.
Yeah.
And, you know, the work is just, it's work, but it's enjoyable.
Yeah. Now, we just got 1 minute left. I know there's an event that's happening later on today, Black Sunday. Princess, can you say something about that event?
Yes, Black Sunday will be happening today here at the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida, 1245 18th Avenue South. It'll be held from 5 to 9, and what this event basically is bringing, you know, mixing hip-hop with revolutionary music and, you know, trying to express, you know, that we need to change the conditions for us and make the community aware of what's going on around them, because most of the time we tend to just, you know, bow our heads and keep it moving because we think conditions are supposed to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is a way that we can organize, make it a little fun, make it for, you know, something for everyone to do. It's a family event, so please come out and enjoy yourselves. It's $5 at the door. We're trying to build and make this Black Sunday event.